Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to Red Men Radio, the Liverpool podcast by myself, Paul Machin, and the man, the legend, Mr. Chris Pajak, sat opposite me.
Oh, thanks, Paul.
I know, it should be in good spirits today, mate. And if you're not, you definitely will be by the end of it, because we're basically going to talk about how Liverpool are amazing in Europe. There's a nice visual gag for those of you watching on YouTube. Hi, welcome. For those of you listening on Acast, thank you very much. Do make sure that you leave reviews as well. Always helps the old algorithm. So if there's a five-star option or a like option, we would like you immensely if you could just click on that. We've got a kickoff question. I said this week it
what
was technically
is the
sent in last week.
Formation?
The kickoff question is as follows. It's from sports_DFA. And it says, would you rather wear an Everton shirt or have Jimmy Traore at left back for the Champions League final? Now, bearing in mind...
I've got to be very careful with what I say here, haven't I?
Bearing in mind that anyone with Twitter will know that, you know, Chris has worn an Everton shirt.
I'm okay with an Everton shirt, to be honest with you. Yeah. It's not a big deal.
Here's the thing. I think people are unfairly criticising Jimmy Traore in a general sense. I think he's become a bit of a meme in and of himself.
Listen, as nice a guy as Jimmy Traore is, and I'm sure he is a nice guy, Usugal surpassed his driving test. He is not Andrew Robertson.
No.
And there's not many left-backs in the world that can say that they are Andrew
Very
Robertson.
Few. Yeah.
I think maybe one.
Maybe.
Maybe one, who knows.
There must be other people who play left-back with that name.
There's a bit of a drop-off there.
Yeah.
And that would worry me considerably.
My thing is the thing. I've never worn an Everton shirt, and I never would wear an Everton shirt. Not because I'm that, like, I'm weird and like because I know, like, we speak to the Evertonians and they can't wear the colour red because they don't want people to think they support Liverpool, and it's like, it's a red t-shirt, it's not like it's got a live bird on it.
Do you walk down the street, go, red shirt, Liverpool fan, blue shirt, Everton fan?
You know what, when I was like 7 and I used to go to Belvale and I had to wear my Liverpool kit because I wanted everyone to know that I supported Liverpool, but that that mentality faded because I'm not arsed.
And you're not 7.
Also that, although mentally, yes. Here's the thing, what this Liverpool side could probably
what
do
would
with
a 7-year-old you think of the things that you've seen and done?
It would be horrified. Scarred for life. Here's the thing, Chris. I wouldn't. There was no way I would choose to wear an Everton shirt, and I don't think Jimmy Traore is as bad. Yes, look, I remember the FA Cup goal. I remember the goal against Burnley. It was horrendous. This is a Champions League winner, mate. We could do with some more Champions League winners in this squad. Now, we could well have an entire squad of them come the end of May, which would be absolutely beautiful. But look, I think I'd have Jimmy Traore's been there. He's done it. Not now. I'd have him
grandest stage of all.
Exactly. You know what I mean? He's been there. He's been involved in the greatest Champions League final of all time. So I'd rather see him at left back than wearing Everton shirt.
Do you remember the score of the derby I watched in the Everton shirt?
I do not. Why?
Well, if I'm 1-0 in watching a Liverpool game,
we definitely won. Because we haven't lost it. I don't think we've lost the derby since you lost the bet to wear that shirt.
Well, I'm 1-0.
Oh, no, we have. Maybe we've lost it. Anyway, we're great. We're great.
Well, I'm 1-0.
Yeah.
And therefore, I'd probably go for the Everton shirt.
What does 1-0 mean?
1-1.
1-1.
Lost none.
Okay, cool. So,
I'm 3-0 and we hold steady shirt at the moment. Not that I'm keeping count. The two Man City games and obviously Porto. Obviously, that matters.
Obviously, Porto.
Obviously, yeah, Roma.
So, interesting question, and we've not got this on here. What is your superstition at the moment? What is the thing? We did this on 13-14, and it was probably some amazing responses. What is the thing that you're doing right now that is the reason why Liverpool are good in Europe? Let us know in the comments below, or tweet us at the Red Ben TV with hashtag European superstitions, please. That would
mine's,
be amazing.
Mine's Gap jeans, blue Adidas straps, Hold Steady t-shirt, black and grey Under Armour jumper, big green coat, and the Liverpool reserves half and half scarf I've worn for the Man City, both legs, and Roma. So basically, Roma, I'm taking this, whether it's 30 degrees or not next week, you're fucked, because I've got my full get-up to take.
And to be fair, slash arse slashing protection is as many layers as
possible.
That's
called fat on me bum.
So, right, a quick rundown of this week's topics. We normally go through the general news that's happened at Liverpool, but there's no sense in it. So just in quickly, the news in brief is Liverpool won 5-2. Mo Salah and Bobby Firmino have 10 Champions League goals each this season. Sadio Mane has 8. James Milner has the record for a season, 9 assists, and we've got one boot in the final. Chris, what a night that was.
It was pretty sensational, and the whole day was a bit nuts, wasn't it? Because, you know, normally when we come in here, we're like focused on what we've got to do and get videos out and all that, and we just couldn't concentrate on anything.
I come in and we sat down and everyone had their laptops out and everyone was looking at them, and I kind of glanced around the room and no one was intently focused. Now, everyone was just killing time. Everyone was refreshing Twitter. Everyone had read every single thing that there was to read and every single video to consume in the build-up to it. We just had to find a way to kill that day. So
thank you, Pro Evo.
Thank you, Pro Evolution Soccer. And what a way to fill the day it was. But it was mad because fast forward to like 11 o'clock at night, and we were both absolutely spent. We were just done in, mentally fatigued, physically fatigued. We'd done frig all day. Our day didn't start until
four,
quarter to five, yeah, by the time we got to the coach greeting kind of thing. But yeah, absolutely emotionally ruined. But it was a fantastic day. It was a fantastic night. It was a fantastic occasion. We have to say it was inevitably marred a little bit by the fact that Liverpool conceded a couple of, we ruined our own party to some extent.
Yes,
I say no. Ruined strong, but you know, yeah, what you take.
Yes and no. I mean, it definitely took the shine off it, didn't it? I think you go in, you finish that game 5-0, and the atmosphere is like something you've probably never seen before, yeah, outside Anfield. But as it was, there was a mix and a range of emotions from different people. Now, you know, whenever an atmosphere is created, generally the best atmospheres are created because everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you walked out of the ground last night, which was different to City, we walked out of the ground at City and everybody's singing LALA into the streets,
yeah,
and there's different people. You're walking one way and there's a group of people walking the other and you're singing the same song, and then there's like that, I can't remember what it's called, but I forget. It's all right. It's completely irrelevant and stupid. I'm going to ask you the question now. Uh-huh. When an ambulance goes past you and the noise changes, you know what it's called?
No.
No idea. Okay. It's not on the tip of my tongue because it would come. There is a
I think it's caps lock engage, smash it into your keyboard because the people who know it will be raging that we can't get this right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then everybody's walking past singing songs, whereas last night there was a little bit of an LA when we were coming out the cop, but as soon as we hit the street it all kind of stopped, and that's because people are on different wavelengths and people are feeling different things.
People are in a bit of a daze as well. I can only equate it to kind of like you get your birthday presents and you get to choose what order you open them in, and you've opened all your best ones, so you've got your PS1 and you've got you've got your games for it and blah blah blah, and the last present you open, you're like, wow, that was amazing. This box, it looks like it could be a game, and you're opening it up and it's socks. It's the shit present that you get to pad your stuff out, and you've opened that last, and instead of being like, wow, look at all this amazing stuff, you've got, you're like, oh. Oh, right, okay.
Recency bias, Paul. You've remembered the socks.
I keep going on about that. The recency bias thing is massive. It's interesting that the craving for it's not been as mad today. I think there's a percentage of Liverpool fans who've kind of, because they remember how scary that end was. They don't want to go back and revisit it. Can I just highly recommend, if you're watching this, if you're listening to this, and you haven't gone back and watched the full match, really, but moreover, extended highlights, and if nothing else, just the goals. Liverpool were fucking sensational last night. We were absolutely incredible. We got a question, which we may as well just do now, from Daniel Mullen. Daniel Mullen, 14, says, was that the best performance at home this season?
For 75 minutes, I would say, yeah, absolutely no problem whatsoever, anointing that as the best performance of the season. But I think for me, you know, Manchester City at home, because of everything that went into it, I actually felt the atmosphere was slightly better at Manchester City, around the ground and in the stadium as well.
Yeah,
I think there was a few more nerves first 15 minutes because I think Roma attacked us a little bit better, although first 10 Manchester City were good against us anyway. So for me, I think so, but then equally, the way that we fought back in those 15 minutes and gained control in that game, there's something to be said for that as well. I mean, listen, you score 5 goals in the Champions League semi-final, it's up there with the greatest performances ever.
Never mind
season.
Exactly.
We're just blessed to see an incredible Liverpool side who sort of keep raising the bar week upon week.
Yeah.
You know, you go and score 5 goals away, can that be topped? Actually, 2 rounds later, we're going to score 5 at home. That's what this Liverpool side do. They're record breakers each and every week, it seems, at the moment. Yeah. And, you know, there was 23 mental records or something that went down last night. I saw a tweet from Squawk and just amazing things that have happened. You mentioned some of them. Mo Salah, Bobby Firmino with the 10 Champions League goals. I mean, it just seems like they're constantly redefining how good this Liverpool side are.
Isn't it funny? Because it was something I remember saying at the start of the season about how you should Liverpool need to get back in the habit of breaking stupid little records, and now we've got it. You know, again.
Months ago you said that.
Yeah. And it looked like a team capable of doing that this time around, which is amazing. But I, you know what, I'll say yeah, because again, recency bias. I agree. Look, I think it's splitting hairs to pick a difference between City and Roma. I think City are a better team than Roma, but Roma's a Champions League semi-final. Everything that goes with that, there should have been more nerves in this game, because this is a bunch of players who've basically won nothing. And if they've won nothing at Liverpool, and this is a club that's won nothing but a League Cup in 12 years or whatever. So, 13 years, Christ. No, 12 years. So, there should have been more to it. And you know, we could have won that game 10-0. We could have, you know, and that's maybe a very slight stretch, but we could have won it 6 or 7. Sadio Mane could have put the early chance away. Genie Wijnaldum could have slotted. Dejan Lovren very nearly scored from a
header. Mane header from a corner as well.
You know, and this is one of those where to go into that and put that level of performance on that stage. I think it's kind of much of a muchness. Look, we're going to talk a little bit more.
There's something to that though as well, isn't there? I think in the last round there was 2 games being played at the same time. Obviously now you've got 1 game being played on a Tuesday, 1 game being played on a Wednesday. You are literally the focus of Europe and TV audiences around the world.
Yeah.
And that is an added pressure that these guys will have felt going into that game.
Exactly, and everyone's saying, again, all the focus was on just that, the fear-mongering, some of it comes from internally, some of it comes from our doubts and fears that creep in, because, again, you know, the aforementioned lack of silverware, we have fallen flat when we've needed to step up a lot over the last decade. But, again, there's the outside pressures of other people to go like, oh, Roma, oh, here's all the things that Roma can do to you. And, you know, there was a point at 5-0 where I was mentally preparing me match report and stuff, and it was just like, and it still stands, but it just had the like swept from under it a little bit, in that, you know, people talking about don't underestimate Roma, stop underestimating Liverpool.
Yeah, that's the thing that annoyed me, is that everybody seemed to focus on one team in this Champions League tie. There was 2 teams. There's always 2 teams in a game of football. Do you know what I mean? And you can't focus on Roma too much and forget about us, because we're incredible.
Yeah.
We're absolutely unbelievable and unstoppable at times. And, you know, we can go through 30 minutes of a game where the other team doesn't get the ball and we can score 4 goals in that time. And, you know, felt like that, didn't it, last night?
Yeah.
These lads are, these tricky, tricky Reds, Paul.
Yeah.
They're incredible.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I want to talk a bit more in depth about some of the individual performances on the night, but we have to mention we've done the final word. So if you want more analysis of this, we've gone through most of the players in the side. We haven't talked about James Milner, Trent, or a few others, so we're going to come to them in due course. But if you want an hour specifically on this with the four of us on the panel, we had Aubrey back as well, and John Higgins as well. So very, very good show. Go to the redmentv.com and sign up for that. But yeah, obviously the night was marred a little bit as well, and I think why I was a bit downbeat when I got home last night. Like I got in and Mrs. come down the stairs singing the Mo Salah song to me, and she was like, "I thought you'd be more upbeat," and I was like, "I'm emotionally drained. I'm a bit knackered. I'm a bit let down by the score." And also, we started to see the news stories about the fan who got put in hospital by the Roma fans, and we just so people know, I didn't see any trouble. Now I didn't see any Roma fans. To be fair, so it's not. I can't comment from the personal experience of it, but what we do know is there's a fan in critical condition. We've been told it's a 50-odd-year-old Irish fella.
53-year-old Irish two teenage kids.
Got a couple of kids as well, and is in a critical condition off the back of it. And the tough thing about this, Chris, is that as Liverpool fans, and I'm sure there'll be non-Liverpool fans watching this because it's the way of the world. People just come on just because they think it's a good platform to have a bit of a laugh in comments and try and poke a hornet's nest or whatever. So it's hard for us to talk about hooliganism because Liverpool have such a history and association with hooliganism through the 80s and what have you. And you can't inevitably. When you mention hooliganism, people will go back to Heysel. And you know what? There's no defendant in Heysel. There are extenuating circumstances around a whole bunch of things. Hooliganism plus terrible safety at a football ground allowed that situation to happen. You can't defend people losing lives in football games, and this is the point. Hillsborough was just horrendous safety plus terrible policing, which led to people dying. People shouldn't be on the verge of that. People shouldn't. It's one thing for have people to be killed by antiquated systems and lack of safety measures and whatever. It's another thing to go over to another country and attack other fans. It's totally alien to me. And there might be older people watching this. And maybe there's people still now who like the physical violence side of footy. They like getting together as the lads and having a scrap. And, you know, to some extent, as long as you're not, you know, causing lasting damage, it happens. It's a cultural thing to some extent. I don't agree with it. I don't like it. But Jesus Christ, it's 2018. In what world is UEFA not coming down on Roma and the Roma fans like an absolute ton of bricks on this? If they don't, it's an absolute scandal.
Hey, mate, they've come out with a statement, haven't they? And they've said they're shocked by this and they shouldn't be shocked by this at all. It happened in 2001 with Liverpool fans in Rome. It happened with Leeds fans. It's happened with Middlesbrough fans. It's happened with Man United fans. It's happened with Chelsea fans all in Rome. You know, the fact that there is a fan base of supporters that have a specific thing that they do. Now, the Roma police chief, I think in 2012 or something like that, talked about it. Well, there's more stabbings in London. But these are targeted stabbings of football fans who travel over for the game who happen to support the opposition team. Yeah. Now, London's a big city and there shouldn't be stabbings in London regardless, yeah. But these aren't targeted stabbings of a specific group of people who travelled over for a fucking football match. Yeah. It's a football match. And to talk about your point about the Heysel and the Hillsborough and all that type of stuff, right? For me, I wasn't old enough. I don't remember that type of football tribalism and hooliganism and stuff. For me, there's a line drawn in the sand, Paul, and that line was drawn 20, 25, 30 years ago, maybe, whatever it was. And I thought we were past all that, and me growing up as a football fan, thankfully I've never had to deal with that. But there are people who've lived through it, and, you know, there's people who've scarred from stuff like that. You know, your dad's mate, you know, your dad was telling us about a story about his mate, and I won't go into that, but there are people who are scarred by these type of things, and it's a football game, and we all get passionate about it. Of course we do. Our fucking lives revolve around this football club because of our passion for this football club. It's a game.
Yeah.
It's a fucking game.
Here's the thing.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, there's the thing, because it exists. It exists in British football still. You know, I lived in Sheffield for years, and I was on, this is going back 15 years now, and I remember being shocked when it was the Steel City derby and they shut all, because I used to live not far from Sheffield United, Grand Bramall Lane, and they shut the pubs within like a 2-mile radius or whatever the ground, all of them. And I come in, I worked in a pub, and I came in, and you couldn't get a pint after 9 o'clock at night. It was like, what the hell's going on? Because it was just all the windows would get put up, put through in pubs near the ground. So it happens in the okay. It's a culture. It'd be wrong of us to say it doesn't. It doesn't exist because it does. But it sounds daft. But if that exists, and look, if there's Liverpool fans who want to go and have a fight with Roma fans, they'll go to the Roma fans. You know what I mean? I just thought the idea of going to another city and literally going, like, there's kids and there's families and there's all that kind of, you know, they've gone out, they've gone away from their part of the ground to look for trouble. They've not searched
for a group of Liverpool fans who want to fight.
Yeah.
They have picked on the innocents and bystanders and people who are just walking down the street. Yeah. Now, from what my understanding of hooliganism was from films and stuff like that, and from films and stuff, is the top boys search out the top boys and they have a scrap with them. That isn't even that.
Yeah.
This is just picking on innocent people.
Yeah.
And there's a fucking big difference. A massive difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's telling. I don't know whether it's two or not, but what I was told is that, like, basically they ended up getting chased off by a bunch of Liverpool fans, and it is the thing.
I saw that on a video.
That's the stuff that you don't want to. That's the problem with this, and that's the problem with that tribalism thing, and we see it all over the place. It's like it's retaliation and escalation of the problem in tribalism, because it's they're the bad guys. You did this, so we do this kind of thing. Like, and that's a dangerous world to enter into, particularly with us going to Rome next week and what have you. And I hope there's no idiots among our fan base who take it upon themselves to become, you know, to get revenge upon it, because you know there's morons in every fan base. But the point of that is, it's this. They're just, it's an institutionalized culture in Roma, and it's I don't know what the answer is, and whether it's someone needs to step up and take responsibility. Now, you saw we had the issues of the coach greeting, and Liverpool fans throwing bottles at the Man City coach, and then so what happens? The club come out and condemn it. The manager comes out in the build up to this game and says, like, basically, don't be idiots. We don't need you. Don't need you doing this. Need to step up. I think it needs the big people within Roma to step up and make examples. Need Francesco Totti to come out and go, what are you doing? You fucking idiots. Pack it in, or you're not proper fans of this club. There needs to be stronger.
It needs to be more than that. These people need to be banned from going to football grounds. You know, that's what happened in the 80s and the 90s in England. Yeah. You would ban these people. It's got to be much easier to ban these type of people now with all the cameras and everything that we've got going on in the world compared to 20, 30 years ago. They just shouldn't be allowed to play football. They shouldn't be allowed on the fucking streets, to be perfectly honest. They need to be fucking locked up.
And it's
always the case.
Well, exactly.
If that's what the type of a person you are, you're not a civilised person. You're not.
And again, it goes back to the police. And it's such a shame that so much of stuff was carried out in the best possible way. Things were modified from the Man City stuff from the Liverpool fan perspective. And I was worried when I saw because we saw some police officers legging it and what have you. And I was like, oh God, please don't let this be Liverpool fans, because just of the negativity around the stuff last time. But it does make you think. You see, in games like that, why aren't the Roma fans literally being marched to the stadium? And I know you're going to get, there's no controlling 100% of the influx in, because you can get to things by a myriad of ways. But there should have been more active policing, there should have been more people around. That shouldn't be allowed to happen around a football game, particularly with a club that's got a track record like that. So it was a fucking clusterfuck along the way. And there's no escaping the fact that their fans should just, again, it's crazy to me that we live in a world where that would happen under any set of circumstances, let alone a football. And, you know, the football's moved on for better or for worse. People might think it's a bad thing. It's not. You know what? People harp back to wanting football to be like the 80s. You speak to people who watched footy in the 80s, the atmospheres weren't as good as people have them in the memories. The experiences, the general comfort of what you do was fucking horrendous. The quality of the football was shite. Everything about football in the 80s, everything about the 80s was shite, to be perfectly honest. But we're particularly on the football, don't hark back to the dark ages of football. It's horseshit. It's just nostalgic bollocks. Football, yes, we live in a more sanitised age. Yes, more needs to be done to make football more engaging for fans, to help passionate fans express their passions. But this isn't that. This is not. This is just fucking base criminality, and you're damn right, absolute animals. You deserve the full weight of the law to be dropped upon their head. And we'll see what happens. I can't look. you UEFA should take action. I can't see it happening. Like, it's total bollocks. Right, listen, look, we had to talk about that because it's horrendous that it's happening. Obviously, my wishes and kisses, yeah, and everyone at the Red Men TV, thoughts and prayers go out to those who were affected by it, and hope everyone pulls through and we can come over it, because it's a football game at the end of the day. And no, Bill Shankly said it's not a matter of life or death. It's more important. You know what, Bill Shankly had a way with words. I'm fairly certain, I don't like people speaking for people who I've never met or never known, I'm not sure a man it was into socialism and the rights of the people would ever choose to have his morals or his words used to defend people dying at football games. I'll leave it at that. Right, we're going to come talk about some of the good stuff, the football players who were magnificent for the Mighty Reds in a minute. But to get a more specific thing on that, Tom, Si and Ross sat down this week. They did the Man of the Match podcast on the RedmenTV.com. They do it after every single game. They sit down, they talk about who the best players are. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's tricky, but it's always a magnificent podcast. Here's a little clip for you.
So look, Mo Salah, I'll just rattle through his stats. He had 4 shots on target, 0 off target, 3 out of 3 dribble attempts successful, 5 key passes, 2 out of 4 crosses done, 3 big chances created, but the 2 that count are the 2 goals and the 2 assists. I mean, you look at that finish, that's worthy of a Man of the Match award anyway, that finish. It was unbelievable, but the runs that he was making all night, I know the front three were doing it all night, but the runs he was making himself, just, they couldn't handle him, Roma couldn't handle him, and they were scared of him. And as soon as he went off, they got a foothold. That shows just how much they were scared of pushing too high for me. And the assist for the fourth goal is one of the easiest things I've ever seen anyone do on a football pitch, but only him and Messi can do it. The way he just shifts his weight a little bit and beats the man with ease, you know what I mean? And I think it's 43 goals and 13 assists for this season. I think it's 13 assists, and that's unbelievable. That's unprecedented.
Fantastic work by the boys. Yeah, you can go on to the RedmenTV.com, sign up now, get your free month trial, see what it's all about. We've got the Final Word show on there as well. There's an exclusive interview with Jamie Carragher. There's an in-depth exclusive interview, a two-part interview with Lucas Leiva. Loads of amazing stuff. And Chris is doing stats and tactics as well, which is the freshest, hottest, most in-depth take on Liverpool from a stats and tactics perspective that you can get on the internet today.
It's also the best show we do.
Sure.
Not my words.
It never is. We never talked about it before. Actually, I want to talk about the coach greeting. They mixed things up a little bit. They changed which side of the dual carriageway the coach came up. The Roma coach came a completely different way. We stood there from 5 o'clock and for 2 hours, basically, waiting for the coach to turn up. Loads of smoke bombs, flares, singing, jumping. Great.
Rain
the whole time. Did not see the coach.
No, didn't see it.
No.
I feel like I've been shortchanged. I didn't pay anything, but I feel like I've been shortchanged regardless. Yeah. What was really, and I've only just started thinking about it when you mentioned it, is I was protecting the curb for around about 2 hours. You know, so I'd got myself at the front of the curb where I was expecting to see it. And then, for some reason, everybody literally turned around. I didn't know why. I didn't realise the coach was coming. I just thought some cool stuff was happening behind me. So I turned around with the crowd. And then smoke bombs, grenades, flares, all that type of stuff. And then it got louder and louder. And I was thinking, wow, this is getting really fucking good. Imagine what it's going to be like when the coach is here. And then someone tapped me on the shoulder. I was like, the Roma coach has gone in, you know. And I'm like, it's fine, don't worry about it. I'm just here for the Liverpool coach. He's like, the Liverpool coach has just gone, lad. And I was like, when?
Yeah.
When? I didn't see the Liverpool coach, you kidding me? And then I turned around to you, I'm like, has Liverpool coach gone? He's like, yeah, I've just, you know, just
I
the
saw
back
the arse end of it going down Anfield Road, yeah.
And I was like, are you kidding
it
me?
It was funny because there was two lads on a sign behind us, which ended up being in front of us when we turned around, and they were going, they were pointing, going, it's coming, it's coming. And I was like, I don't see how the coach is coming up this way. And I said, I didn't realise they'd switch which side of dual carriageway it was coming up. So, I was like, okay, I was ready for it to come, and then I basically came from the other side. But you know, ultimately,
I didn't need the coach for it to be a great coach greeting.
No.
That's what I've learned.
Yeah.
I've taken that away from me, and you'll never take that off me.
You'll never take away my freedom. You'd think I would get bored of LA. It's simply not possible.
Nope.
I just, and yeah, I know, literally. Oh yeah. T-shirts available right now, by the way. Smartly Sporting, RLALA shirt. For how long's that on sale for, actually?
Till Friday night, man.
Till Friday night. So if you listen to this on Saturday morning, unlucky, you've missed your chance. But go to theredmentvshop.bigcartel.com.
Yeah.
Correct. And order it now while you can. It's available in navy blue and in that wonderful shade of deep red, as gloriously matching of Chris Pajak's eyes right now. yeah. Get it, it's boss. Anyway, yeah, no, the whole thing was fantastic, and I love that song, and it was another one of the situations where I walked out of that feeling 10 foot tall. I think I'd said, as we got away, people started asking me, and I was like, I'd gone from it being, I can't remember what my prediction was, I thought it'd be like a 2-1 or a 3-1, I was like, nah, 3-0. I felt all of a sudden, I was like, right, I feel powerful in this, I felt loads more confidence, and that's all, to some extent, Chris, that's more what that's about. It's about... It's a show of power, and even whether it's meant for that or not, and it's ended up being an incidental bonus, when you're surrounded by fans in that regard, and you've got that real sense of togetherness, and the fact that it pissed down with rain for the whole time, we were all there, and it didn't dampen anyone's mood or spirit.
Just my head.
Yeah, literally, yeah. And my jeans. But you come out of that just thinking like, my God, what a
force How can anyone beat this? Yeah. You can't beat that. And listen, we've proved it time and time again. When we've done these things, we've been incredible. And the team has just been lifted to the point where they're like the best team in the world, and certainly the best team in Europe right now. And, you know, it's mad, isn't it? Because there is that power that you get from it. You come out and you're like, wow, this is such a thing. And we went and had a quick pint, didn't we, in the Oakenfield, was it?
Oakfield. You've done that a couple of times.
Have I?
The Paul Oakenfold.
I don't know who that is, but I'm guessing. Ah, Cream.
Sure.
Was it Cream?
Yeah.
Yes.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, you come out of there, we had a quick pint in there, and it kind of like you just recharge your batteries, you got like an hour, and then everybody's ready to do it all over again. So you've stretched your vocal cords, you're ready to sing, you're ready to shout, you're ready to scream. But it's not just the cop. And that's the great thing about the coach welcoming, is everybody is ready. So when they go into the stadium, everyone's looking around and like, we're all up for this. Of course we're all up for fucking this. I was there. I fucking greeted the coach. We're going to just carry it on. And it just takes the atmosphere inside. It makes the atmosphere 10 times better than if you just walk into the match cold 15 minutes before, scan a quick pie, have a quick bovril, and then start singing. Because, I mean, that I don't know. I've never spoken to Mariah Carey about it or Taylor Swift or anything like that. You have no idea where I'm going with this, do you?
Okay, I'm not, but I'm fascinated.
But I'm guessing that they don't just turn up 15 minutes before a concert, have a quick bovril and a fucking pie and start singing. They need to do a little bit of singing before.
If I'm going to go out on a limb and make a judgment on Mariah Carey and Taylor Swift's pre-gig routines, you know what? I am fully behind the notion that there's no way. I would almost say it's almost 100% possible that they would not go with a pre-sing bovril. I'm not saying they wouldn't scan a meat and potato pie, but definitely
Mariah might. Mariah. I don't think Taylor would.
Yeah, yeah.
Tay-Tay.
yeah, it's... No, that was the thing. We walked into the ground and it's this.
I love you,
the
Taylor.
Flags are all right. What? The flags are the flags are all out. Everyone's already singing, and they mention it on the TV commentaries. What when I watched later on, how like people were in the ground like an hour and a half beforehand, all getting built up for it, and that was the thing. People went for the singing. They went to generate the atmosphere, and it was interesting because I noted it was like 5 minutes into the game, and the lower Kenny Dalglish were all still stood up. When's that? And you can see like that.
I'm
that
mentally
far
thinking, where's the lower Kenny?
Yeah. Oh, lower sense, you need right, okay. Yeah.
And the far end, you know, by the main stand by the Annie Road end, and like they're all up, and the scars are twirling. It's just a sight to behold, and you realise when you look at that what Man City did with the Etihad, and they gave them all the flags, and they gave them the baby blue and white toilet paper to shred down the place.
What did they give them? The single use plastic?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Single use prophylactics. That created a great visual spectacle. We did it ourselves. People just brought scarves and just, you know, there's people I know, like, you've never worn scarves to a game before, and there's people who've gone out and bought them, and there's people who've dug out old scarves, you know, from the past.
Si was here. We were just about to go, and he's like, I'm going to go and get a scarf from the office, because that's how much it meant to people, because they want to be part of something that's bigger than they are. Yeah. You know what I mean? You don't want it handed to you.
Yeah.
That's what Manchester City fans had. Yeah. They were handed it. We took it for ourselves, and there's a difference.
Yeah. And that thing of when you've got what amounted to, what, like 50,000 plus people, and not necessarily all of them were, you know, rallying around with the scarves or whatever, but three sides, you know, what, four fifths of the ground or whatever is there going for it. It's just, you can take a moment sometimes and you take a step back from your life and you look at it and you're like, wow. You know, you're so often in the thick of everything you do in life. Life is just a constant. Just
in the
get
moment.
Up, eat, drink, sleep, work, barrel through your life, bouncing from event to event. Sometimes in those things, you've kind of got to take a little moment and just appreciate what's happening in front of you. And there's something incredibly special about what we're doing at the moment.
I looked up at the upper main because I could see it from my seat in the cop, and it was just scarves.
Yeah.
And that's all it was. Like, I was looking up for You'll Never Walk Alone and stuff, and it's like, You'll Never Walk Alone's always great.
And they left them on the seats when they went to get a corporate bottle.
No, upper. Upper. They don't put the corporate stuff up there, mate.
Yeah, too far away.
It's far too far. Unless there's lifts, you might get a few going up in a lift or something. Yeah, but it's just like, you have to take a step back. And I'm always reminded, and it sounds ridiculous because I've always got my fucking phone out of the game. Take the still frames and photos with your mind. It's a Green Day lyric, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I always try and think about that when you're somewhere that you want to remember. Try and take that with you.
Yeah.
Because you'll look back on that in 20, 30 years and you'll go, fuck. Like, the very first time I think I did that was Oasis in Finsbury Park, because we were at the front. We remember it well, don't we?
I wasn't there, so no.
Okay. I took a really great image of that, but it wasn't of the people that I was with. It was Liam Gallagher singing in front of me and stuff like that. And that is one of the, like, the my best memories ever. I've not seen that on telly. I've not seen, like, anything back or anything like that. We didn't have camera footage of it, but I can tell you exactly where we were in relation to him and what he was doing at the time. Like, because you have to make those special moments yourself, and you have to take the time to appreciate them, because they don't come around very often. It's been 10 years. You mentioned it in the build-up. Liverpool haven't been in that situation. Enjoy it. Everybody walked away from that going, that will be one of the games that's remembered, regardless of whether we win this competition or not.
Absolutely. We've got Lauren through the vision mixer for us there. Lauren, how old were you 10 years ago?
Eight.
Lauren was eight. Best experience, the last couple of games, best experience? Yeah, this is the thing, like, you know, and this is a whole new generation of fans that we're getting to experience this kind of thing. Like, it's just absolutely out of this world. So yeah, you know, I know it's stressful. I know the goals conceded kind of take a little bit of an edge off it, but they shouldn't. You know, they shouldn't.
Enjoy the fucking ride.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's talk James Milner, Chris. We didn't mention him on the particularly
on the
final
not
word show.
On the final word, it feels like you were saving something. I was
saving James Milner. No,
James Milner has saved us.
Yeah, James
it's
Milner.
It's time someone saved him. Yeah. Paul, you're spot on.
Who'd have thought? a year ago or 2 years ago that we would be, I would be saving James Milner for a piece of content because I was so desperate to talk about how good he is.
Are we going to be talking of James Milner like we talk about Gary Mack in Free Transfers?
That is an absolute belter of a shout, yeah, Chris. I couldn't have phrased that any better. Free transfer. We've got him younger as well. You know, if he plays to Gary Mack's age.
We got Gary at 35.
Yeah, you know, he was done. He was completely done pretty much by the time we got him. We got a good season and a half.
Jimmy Milner.
Yeah. I am blown away by James Milner. And that performance, once again, don't.
Your Twitter account.
You're boring tweets. You're Jamie Milner. Oh, what's that?
Your throwback Thursdays.
You're slightly square head. your Pixar character face. I love James Milner. He's fantastic. And that
he's
was
the
another,
best of us, Paul.
Yeah, he... you know, this is a lad who played left-back for us, and we had a little bit of a... And let's be honest, we had a little bit of a snigger at that. We thought... Oh, well, you know, he come here to play centre mid for us, and now Jürgen's got him playing left back. And look, he was tremendous, and he won a lot of respect, I think, from Liverpool fans playing left back
and
last season. Yeah, of course. But I think we kind of, the respect that came from fans was like, oh, look, you've done a tremendous job playing left back. Well done, mate. But it was still very much, it was about his tireless work rate as much as anything else that people still went on about. He's class, mate. He's just broken the record for assist him in a Champions League
whose
season.
Record was it?
You know what, did he have a joint with Neymar, is that what it is?
Yeah. Neymar, the world's most expensive player. Just by the way, just I'll let you correlate that yourselves. James Milner, free from Manchester City, and here's the really great thing.
He's a
better player for playing at left back last season.
Yeah, I agree.
And because that midfield three is such a difficult role, that eight role, because you do have to cover for the fullback so often, and the way that Robertson and Trent move forwards. But he's so comfortable when he has to cover for him, but he's equally as comfortable because he played on the fucking wing when he has to overlap. Yeah. And he's a centre mid as well. And it's that tireless work rate. It's the reading of the game. It's the experience that he brings. It's absolutely everything. I just wish we got him 10 years ago. I really, really, truly do, because he could be an all-time club legend if we'd have got him 10 years ago, or if we'd have got him at the same point, but he was 25, like a year and a half ago, but he was 25.
Exactly, you think about it, and he started the season as a bit of a squad utility man. We talked about it, like, we didn't get introduced. There's games where he wasn't playing, and we're like, well, where the hell's Milner? What, is he good at playing? Is he not good enough? And I remember we kind of theorised that there's a degree to which he's had to relearn the midfield role because he's not been in it. So it took him time. And then, you know, think about that Maribor game away from home. And
three assists.
He basically played the...
He came on in that game,
Lallana,
didn't he?
I think he started that game. I think he played the Lallana role in that game. He played like right of the three midfielders, just slightly advanced supporting the attack, and he just cropped up everywhere in that attack. He was just absolutely out of this world, and he's just played at that level pretty much ever since. And again, this is a lad who gets maligned. He gets lumped in with the Bourne and Milner account and what have you. And it's great to see him or his PA having a bit of a laugh with that on his own Twitter account now. But you talked about it, his creativity, his vision, his work rate,
his set pieces.
You know, the stuff that he does the agricultural stuff. So it's very easy to look at him and go, we criticise the Pilsen midfield of having him in it and going, it's a bit agricultural. He's putting a crunching tackle in and winning the ball, and then he drops a shoulder and he skins someone and he starts another attack off.
He's setting tempo of the game as well, isn't he? You know, you can see that, you know, sliding tackles, flying in on Nangala and all that type of stuff, the Rossi, and he's there, he's everywhere. It always seems to me like he's like almost a firefighter in that he always turns up wherever he's needed.
Yeah.
And it's not by accident. Yeah. It's by skill and experience, and his football brain. He just understands where he's going to be needed, and that sounds so simple to say, but that's probably one of the hardest things in football to learn.
Yeah. Well, look at it, Chris. You know that here's the thing, and this is why what's amazing about Jurgen Klopp and what's amazing about this Liverpool side and what's amazing about footy, and I love the why we're doing it this way, because for all the will in the world, you look at Man City's midfield, and if you don't watch a lot of football within your own club, it doesn't take a genius to look at Man City's
midfield.
Talking
about me here, Paul, lad. Feels like you're talking about me.
It doesn't take a genius to look at the various midfield options that other teams have got and go, that's a great midfield, or they're great players. The midfield we've got in Henderson, Milner, Gini Wijnaldum, and obviously Ad Oxlade-Chamberlain, whatever, and we're forgetting about Emre Can, and we're forgetting about Lallana, whatever. You'd look at that on paper, because that's not a great midfield on FIFA, and it's probably not a great midfield on Footy Manager. But the point is these are all technically gifted footballers with great football brains, and they are, at this point, yeah, maybe I would swap them. Maybe I would swap for these other players just to have the experience of seeing a De Bruyne every week and seeing a David Silva and what have you. But you know, this midfield is very capable. There's a good chance we'll get to the end of this season and that midfield will have won a European Cup for us. And all of a sudden, you think back to what we had in Istanbul. The midfield was the best thing we had in that team, pretty much. But defence, centre-backs and midfield was all that team really had in terms of absolute quality. And that the midfield is almost like the least glamorous part of our team. And yet...
Hey, listen, what's the nicest part of a car? It's not the fucking engine, but it's the thing that makes it work. And that's what our midfield is on the football pitch, isn't it?
Yes.
It's the body of the cars, what everybody loves, or the trimmings, or whatever, you know what I mean? But the engine's what makes it fucking go. Right, you can't have the car. Right, it's just a shit car with no engine. It's, yeah. it's essentially just a seat. but that's what our midfield is. And what Klopp has been able to do, and I don't know how he's been able to do this, because he loves players who are able to play in different positions. Yet what he's managed to get somehow is these guys who can play right wing and play defensive midfielder and play the six and play the eight and play fucking fullback, and yet they're not just the jack of all trades, they're specialists almost in every position. It's mad.
Being a jack of all trades is makes you a specialist.
But then normally it's a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not the case with these lads.
Yeah.
You know, you throw Genie in the six the other week, he looked fucking unbelievable.
Yeah.
You throw him back in the eight yesterday, he looked fucking unbelievable. Yeah. You throw James Milner the left back, he's sound. You throw him left wing, sound, centre. They're all specialists at what they do, and what they do is fucking loads of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it is. It is fantastic, and you start to realise why we take our time over who we're looking for, and you realise there's a reason why the lads are here. Because we're at a point where there's probably we'll do a lot of the transfer stuff post season, of course. Always, again, another good reason to go to redmentv.com, because we cover this in a lot of depth and detail. But you weed stuff out as you go along. Your squad evolves, and there will be a couple of guys who leave, but not. Of the lads who are involved, who've been involved in games this season, I think most of the lads who Jurgen Klopp doesn't like or don't fit in with the mentality required are either out on loan or they've already been shipped out of the shipped out of the football club. And you know, this is what you realise, is that some people, I think, just take a top line view, they're looking, I'm not sure about him. Well, you know what, Jurgen's sure. Jurgen and Brubach are very sure, because they wouldn't put that much trust in it, and it wouldn't work, because if they didn't have the ability to deliver, it would be glaringly obvious if a player simply didn't fit our team. You've just got to look at the difference. Like, have we missed Daniel Sturridge since he's been gone?
Who?
Exactly. You know, I love Daniel Sturridge, but we no longer have games where even Danny Ings, who, to be fair, wasn't great when he came when he came on, fine, playing right wing for the centre forward, fine. I think that's as much a lack of other players to play in those positions as it is his fault. But we don't get through games and go, I'm not sure if he's a Klopp player anymore. Daniel Sturridge, we forever go and you need to play to his strengths.
Origi, we said exactly the same about him, Paul.
We don't
Can
say
he play that
anyone?
One up top? We used to say all the time, is he a Klopp player? He's not here anymore. Yeah.
We don't say of any players in that team anymore, I'm not convinced that they need to do this or they need to do that. Everyone is just working in perfect harmony, everyone's performing to the absolute utmost of their abilities, and it's great. One more player I want to discuss, because as I said, we've done most of these, so I don't want to, you know, for people who watch the final Word Show religiously, as well you should, you can go and check out all this stuff. But we didn't talk about Trent particularly either, and it just
he's the best of us, Paul.
I love him. We talked about it in the car on the way home, and I think our phrase, it was on the lines of, they were happy for him to have the ball for the, and all of a sudden, it was Trent was like, great, and I'm happy to have the ball. I think they thought he'd wilt. Like, they'll put him under pressure and he'll make mistakes.
Did they not watch the Manchester City game?
Because it wasn't even like Trent was required to do a ton of, like, because, like, Leroy Sané in the Etihad, it was backs to the wall. And he had to, you know, he had to be totally switched on and all that. And, you know, a little bit toward the end of the game, but maybe he wasn't as good defensively, I think, last night as he was in the Etihad. But where he was vital for us, he basically was our right back creative playmaker,
deep line playmaker, and that's what, you know, I'm about to record, and I've done the research for the Stats and Tactics show this week. You know, we'll be looking at 45 minutes probably in depth at the game, and one of the segments is on Trent Alexander-Arnold and what he offers us from that right back position. We did a focus on him a couple of weeks ago where we looked at his defensive work, but it's really his offensive work that shone last night. You're exactly right, and you know, it's that ability to have two touches of the ball, and in those two touches, one of them spraying a 40-yard pass into space for Mo Salah, and you'd be surprised at how little time they actually gave him when you watch it back, because they were onto him really quick. But what is unbelievable about his performance is that he doesn't need a lot of time to be able to hit a perfect ball. You know, he's not like maybe I'm being a little bit harsh on this, but when Van Dijk lines a pass up, or, you know, Dejan Lovren lines a long ball up, and you can see who it's going to and who he's winding up to quite a second or two before he sees it. Trent shifts the ball and hits the ball, and you've got no idea where he's playing that pass to, and it's into Mo Salah. And it was criminal defensively from Roma, let's not beat around the bush here, but 40, 50-yard balls to someone's feet are incredibly difficult to do. Whether they're in a bad position or not, you've still got to play the pass, and you're taking advantage of their position as well. He's been able to compute all of this stuff and play the pass that gets us in behind. And it was so often throughout the game where we went direct and you'd say it was a long ball, but it's not a hit and hope long ball. It was a tactic for Liverpool. I think we played 68 long balls last night. You know, 67 of them were sent to Mo Salah's feet. I mean, you know, I've been doing the research. And then I looked into it. Mo Salah scored 197 goals this season. I'm convinced of it. He's going to get 200, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, definitely.
But no, Trent truly
what's great about him is that I have no fears of him in possession. Now, like, I've seen right backs, lots of right backs, Nathaniel Clyne sometimes, and Gomez sometimes, and countless players who've played full-back for Liverpool down the years. They get possession, because I get it with Robertson a little bit, because I love Andy Robertson, I think he's great, but you don't want him in a confined space with two men, close them down, if he's not got good close options by.
Yeah,
he's very good at moving the ball, and he is very good in those situations for a left-back. Trent is fucking exceptional in them for a right back, because he plays them like a midfielder. He's very much like Milner was from the left back position last season, and a lot of our play went through Milner last year as a result. And he gets it, and you're right, his ability to, he just takes a touch and then he picks a pass, and that's whether, and it's never panicked. It's never, and if it's slightly rushed, all he's ever going to do is just put it into a little bit of space. And that's the beauty, of course, of him being on Mo Salah's side, and that works a lot, is that if he does get it wrong, he tends to get it wrong in the right way.
Yeah.
And that is, if you're going to get it wrong, overhit it rather than underhit it. And his distribution is such an asset. And it's one of those things where other teams will look for weaknesses. And all of a sudden, the number of players in our starting 11 whom, if you're going to set traps, you would target, that's decreasing with every passing week, because even the ones who are, there should be the liabilities are getting better. Andy Robertson should be a liability, and he's not really. You're really looking at Dejan Lovren's almost the last one in that side for whom he can get himself in a muddle, because it's not quite his thing.
What are you going to do if that is the case? What do you put a man on him? So you free Van Dijk up?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, exactly. What are you doing? Are you going to try and press him? Because he doesn't get flustered in that regard. Yeah. You'll just knock it back to the keeper or he'll out it. He's not asked.
The good thing is that he's got a decent range of passing on him, but also it means that there's 10 other players to whom he can just kick it to and they'll handle it.
Yeah.
It's not as much of an issue. No, very, very good stuff indeed. Best moment of the night?
Henderson absolutely smashing Nangolan everywhere.
Scattered 45
minutes in, Jordan Henderson, Nangolan's got the ball, running towards it. Jordan Henderson, captain of Liverpool Football Club, I might add. bang, Nangolan into next week on his ass, toss overs. What the fuck's going on, Jordan? I imagine he just went like this. I fucking ran off like that. Fucking loving it.
It was the best moment of the entire game.
And I include the five goals in that. Yeah, well done, Jordan. You are my captain.
Absolutely.
You're the best of us.
Fantastic. So many best of us. And there were 11 of them. 12 of them, to be fair, last night. Yeah, great. Great, great stuff. Listen, you know, there's a couple of things. We could talk about the disappointments of the game. We're not doing that again. We've done that on the final whistle.
Also,
that's where we do... Sorry, 2 seconds. That's where we do the analysis of all that kind of stuff. So if you want a proper in-depth and a bit more balance to it, I'm not doing this on the podcast. It's the podcast. Let's be happy. Go on, Chris. What are you going
to say? The Roma... I said it to you last night, and I don't think many people will notice it, but the fella who was taking the Roma corners, main stand cop corner it was, when Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain was getting walked around, and he was getting an applause off the fans. The corner taker actually applauded Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and I didn't see any of the other Roma players do that. I thought that was a really cool little moment.
Did he applauded him?
He applauded him. He clapped him.
Yeah, the only other one was something I watched when watching the highlights back. It was watching Francesco Totti and Bruno Conti just get gradually more miserable as the game went on, to the point where there was another fella there, and right the last one had come back to them, and they were both just head and hands. Totti just looked like he wanted to die, just staring off into the middle distance, wondering how quickly he could get out of Liverpool. Absolutely magnificent.
Final one for me. I know Sadio Mane blazed this opportunity over bar, but the back heel to put it into
the
his touch.
Like the yeah.
Oh my days! Like, I mean, I don't know how you do that in stride.
Yeah, how you?
He's running at full pelt.
Yeah, that in itself is not that difficult. It's difficult to not blam it as hard as you possibly can and basically put it out for a goal kick. Yeah, to be able to do it and still catch it once you've done it is genuinely
I just kind of wish he'd done a rainbow flick over the keeper, because I think he's scoring if he's doing that.
Absolutely, just slot it. But I think it actually informs Mo Salah's finish later on. I think he's gone, no, this is how you do it, mate. Just gentle dink.
Chantil Mo Salah.
Yeah. Briefly then, because we're going to be doing the build-up show tomorrow ahead of Stoke, back to reality.
Fucking
back to Stoke in the Premier League. I believe, I've been told that I should have done my own research, but I'll trust Simon. If he's wrong, then blame Si. That we need 4 points from the last three games to secure top four. The Stoke thing is a conundrum. At 5-0, if we win that, and that's therefore tied completely over, I personally am putting a full strength team out for Stoke, and I'm resting in Rome. If I get told these guys, you've got 150 minutes, say, in this player, this player, and this player over two games, how do you apportion that time? I preference getting the points in Stoke, because you don't need to.
Who is Stoke playing up top?
Peter Crouch.
And anyone else?
Occasionally Mame Biram Diouf, I think.
I'm probably playing my two centre halves. You know they're going to have to deal with that again at the weekend. I'm giving them practice at
Peter
that.
Peter Crouch is a decent key player to keep you tipped, topped up, isn't it?
When you know you've got Dzeko and you're going to have that Shink, what's his name?
Schick.
When you know that basically the two of them are going to be starting, I want my centre-halves to get a little bit more practice at that. And I probably want my DM as well, to be honest. Because I want to get him on the other side of it.
We haven't got a choice, have we? That's the big problem. No Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. It's that thing of, this is a massive game. Because we didn't pick the point to get the 4 points in the last couple in a couple of home games, if we'd beaten Everton, or if we'd managed to beat West Brom, this is far more, I think you can take it a little bit easier than this, but we've played ourselves into a situation where, and personally I think Jürgen as well, I think you want to go to Stamford Bridge going, look, we'll try and win, of course we will, and we should be able to go quite strong for that game regardless, but you can lose at Stamford Bridge. I would like us to be able to just have 3 points in the bag, and then you go to Brighton last game of the season knowing that a draw get you the bare minimum what you need. Get 3 points and then see where you finish.
I'm pretty comfortable with the way that the fixtures have worked out, to be honest with you. I think it's quite good for us that we played on Tuesday and the next game's the Wednesday, and we've got the Saturday 12:30 kick-off. I think that's a real big help for us. In the Premier League, I haven't done that for us, not the way that Real Madrid have like 7 days off before their Champions League game or whatever. But I think the fixture list has been a little bit kind to us there. And I'm all right with going as full strength as you're willing to go. Like, I'm thinking maybe like an Ings again up top or something like that. Maybe you rest Salah this time as opposed to Firmino.
I mean, the thing is, I guess the way that it's kind of structured for the Rome game is that you need to be absolute. The worry is that you don't want your legs falling off in the last 20 minutes.
That's true.
But also a goal or two goals, you know, for Liverpool kills that game off, and you've got a better chance to do that. Regardless, even if you rest a bit, you still got a better chance of that being fitter and fresher in the first hour of the football match anyway. So I suspect Klopp will go pretty strong for Stoke. The hope is that, I mean, the thing is, you can rest. It's tough. It's just it's the midfield. The midfield's the big issue because it's so vital to how we play. And you can see how Jimmy Milner got ended up left wing, very, very left wing right at the end of that game. And he was trying step overs and all this. And he was just about getting, he just looked done in, completely stuck and finished. And, you know, you then got that issue of, do you bring a Curtis Jones in for this game? Do you bring a Ben Woodburn into the midfield?
This is the Premier League and we're fighting for top four.
Yeah.
That's what you've got to look at it as, and it's unfortunate. It's the midfield. You're exactly right. The injury to Ox is a real blow for us because it was tough when we just had one change to make. You know what I mean? Now there's no changes. Do you change formations? You go three at the back. Do you go maybe 4-2-4-2? I don't think we've got the players to do anything like the 4-4-2. I think the three at the back is probably the only thing we can do formation wise. Mm-hmm. That means we can play with one less midfielder. But I think you've got. I think if there's one midfielder you're resting, it's James Milner.
Yeah, I think that's a decent shout. Because again, he's not only played a lot of football, but then again, Jordan Henderson, I don't know how physically capable he is of playing that much. The good thing is, and I've mentioned this in a few places, we know that the team bang into the unity of pain. So, you know, maybe you do just go with the same team again and go, lads, look, we'll figure it out. You know, to be fair, this is the way it's going to work. If you want to be in a European Cup final, then you're going to have to give us absolutely. You're going to give us anything, but you're going to have to find new depths, and then we're going to go the week after, and we're going to we'll figure out. Get to the end of the season, get past Brighton, and you'll hopefully be in a European Cup final, and you'll have a week. We'll give you a few days off. You know, go and sun yourself for a few days in between.
Jürgen Klopp, I think we mentioned on the build-up show a week or so ago, Jürgen Klopp said I rotated early in the season so I don't have to rotate now. And I strongly believe that he's right, and if he's saying that, that sounds...
It's true when you've got... But you can bring people into the game,
I'd normally be sat here telling you, break the spirit early of Stoke and take your players off. The problem with the West Brom results, that will give Stoke confidence, even if we go two goals up, is that they know that our eyes are on Wednesday in the Champions League, and they'll be waiting for that drop-off. So their manager might be saying, just keep it close, and then they have got to go into their shell a little bit and reserve some energy, and that's going to be the key thing for me in this game.
We've got a couple of them related to what we've discussed there. Curtis Brierley, LFC Kurt, and Callum Bailey. Curtis said, what's the plan with Ox injury? We only have three midfielders left. Surely Woodburn were brought into the squad. And Callum Bailey said, could see Gomez or Klein at right back and Trent in midfield. That's actually a decent shout, but again, it's just like... I want Trent as fit as possible for this. That's why the three at the back thing is maybe makes sense, because you can play Gomez as right of a back there, and you can play Klein as a right wing back if you need to, on the other side
if you want.
Exactly, yeah. You know, so that's maybe what we might see. But it's a conundrum. This is a big test. The big managers earn the big bucks, and if you want to be successful in the season, then you have to find problems to these things. But also equally, the good thing is that I would bank on. I'm not saying we're going to make a hero out of a Curtis Jones, or this is the game where Ben Woodburn absolutely, you know, re-emerges or whatever. Ben Woodburn's here, provided he's fit. I mean, I don't quite know. I know he's been in and around stuff a little bit more recently, which is good. But, you know, there's a lad who should have had more first team action this season. He was on the fringe. He was close to it last year. Trent made that step up because he's had opportunity to make that step up. Could be one of those situations where Ben Woodburn could do it. We saw a bit of him in midfield in pre-season, and this could just be his grasp. You know, we talk about Man United in 08-09 and Federico Makeda.
We always talk about that.
No, but you know, but this is what happens. Man United and massive football clubs have this thing where when the shit hits the fan, they bring in this lad, and whether they get a career out of him or not, irrelevant. They bring them in and they don't falter under the pressure and in the spotlight. So big chance for some, for potentially for some fringe players or young players to maybe not make a name for themselves, but certainly lay claim to making a name for themselves.
You also had the greatest idea ever last night, Paul, and I'm surprised you haven't already mentioned it.
I totally forgot I'd said it. So I don't think it's possible, unfortunately, but if it was possible to register a free transfer, register Steven Gerrard. Register Steven Gerrard. I don't think it's possible. I think we've missed the window for that, but imagine. Don't even have to play, just put him on the bench. Just put him on the bench for Stoke. Get him to, because that was his last game. His last game was there. It was against Stoke as well, wasn't it? That horrendous, horrendous game. There'd be something nice about that. I get it. It's not possible, but he's there. He's in reasonable shape. You don't need much. Even if you just
reasonable
minutes.
Shape. Have you just said Steven Gerrard's in reasonable shape? I thought I was in semi-reasonable shape. He's in fucking
for the
shape,
professional
that
footballer.
Lad.
Yeah, but what I mean is he played that like seven-a-side game against Hashtag, I think it was, and got injured off the back of it. He's not a young man anymore, you know. You think, and he's played a lot of football in his day. What is it? You're not putting Steven Gerrard into the cut and thrust of a competitive game for 90 minutes. But if you
Paul,
want five
I fucking
minutes,
I am.
Yeah. If you want 5 minutes just to give Jordan Henderson's legs a bit of a rest so he's fine. Yeah, again, it's not possible. Wouldn't it be amazing? Yes. If anyone else has got solutions to the Stoke conundrum, let us know in the comments below, please.
You may as well register next season as well, though, because he's a homegrown.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah, just in case. Yeah.
Why the fuck not?
Yeah, solutions to the Stoke conundrum in the comments below. Please drop a like on the video if you're watching on YouTube and subscribe to the channel. We are on the march. We are less than 10K away.
It's amazing.
250,000, a quarter of a million subscribers. Otherwise, if you're listening on audio podcast type devices, like phones or your ears, make sure you leave 5-star reviews or whatever the kind of system is in place for that. But other than that, thank you very much, Chris. That's been an absolute pleasure.
It has been an absolute pleasure, Paul.
Yeah, hopefully Stoke continues to be a pleasure, and hopefully we don't die in Rome, and we're back for more podcasty goodness next week. Walk on.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.